Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode. It is time for the Friday Newscap, and normally we'd hear some voices from the news this week, but today we'll be taking a look back at Arizona politics over the course of the past year and a little bit of a look ahead to what 2026 may have in store. So let's get right to the conversation. And for that, I'm joined by Chip Scutari of SNC Communications. Good morning, Chip.
Good morning, and happy early Festivus.
Happy early Festivus, indeed. Former state lawmaker Jen Longton. Jen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hopefully no airing of grievances during the next segment here. So, Chip, I want to start with Senator Mark Kelly, who has been in the news pretty much all year long. Recently, though, of course, he was part of the video that a number of Democratic federal lawmakers made, essentially saying to service members, you are allowed to and, in fact, have the responsibility to disobey illegal orders, not really spelling out what that might be or if there have been any. He's kind of in hot water with the Defense Department. He's in hot water with President Trump. I'm curious, like, when you look at where things stand right now, we saw just this week that Pete Hegseth is saying this has been escalated now to potential discipline. What do you make of where we are right now?
Well, I think this is all a result of the strikes on the alleged drug boats off the coast of Venezuela. Mark Kelly served in the military, was an astronaut. I think this is passionate to his core. I do think, you know, that video was a very well done, highly designed effort to, you know, probably provoke the Trump White House. And I think they really believe what they were saying, but it has really put him in the limelight. I don't know if that was his plan. There was six or seven other Democrats who served
overall,
in the military or the CIA. One thing about Senator Kelly we've noticed in the last year, we were just talking about it off air, is his public profile has really grown over the last year or so, ever since he was considered for a VP slot for
Kamala Harris.
So I think you know, he's going to fight this to the end. I don't think he has anything to lose. I think the legal case is on his side. And who knows if this could be a launch to the 2028 presidential campaign. There'll be a gazillion folks wanting to, you know, have their name on that list. But I think it's really put him in the spotlight for the next couple of years, especially next year for the midterms, which would be crucial for both political parties.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jen, we've seen that Senator Kelly has raised what a lot of folks in politics have called presidential amounts of money. Presumably, that ability would be helpful, especially if his name ID is even higher, helping out other Democrats in 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the news conference he did following the initial backlash from the video, as I watched that, I saw, you know, the potential launch of a presidential campaign in that moment where he compared his personal career timeline to that of this president. You know, I think that I can't believe there is anyone in this nation that doesn't recognize Mark Kelly as a man of valor and integrity. And the comments, the video was straightforward. There was no, there was nothing in that video specifically that called any member, any service member to an act. It reminded them of their duty. It's something that happens in boot camp. It's something that happens routinely. There was nothing wrong with that video.
And I think the bigger picture here is I don't know if these Democrats, including Senator Kelly, would have done this a year ago. Mm. I'm not saying they did this because of President Trump's falling poll numbers, but you see more and more people willing to stand up to Donald Trump, which just, you know, 6 months ago he had a vice grip on the party. We saw it with the state senators in Indiana saying no thanks to redistricting, even coming under very tough threats about, you know, dollar funding for roads and primaries. So we see a fraying of the Trump base a little bit. Well, he's had a, you know, he's got nine million lives. We'll see. He could bounce back. But this is one of those examples of people pushing back against the Trump presidency.
And remember, this administration is less than a year old. And I think that a year ago, folks were still practicing decorum, still practicing, and not that everyone has left decorum behind. I think this administration has done that to a certain degree. But I think that folks came in exercising the standard decorum of the institution. And we've recognized that that is not an effective tool for dealing with this administration. And they're being more blunt than they were a year ago.
Go ahead, Mark.
Finish up.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, former President Biden fell into the trap of, while the metrics on the economy look good, and him and Vice President Harris, were saying, hey, trust us, it's not that bad, it's pretty good. And I think Donald Trump, he usually, if you like him or not, love him, loathe him, he really has a good pulse of the people. Mm-hmm. And I think he's falling into the Biden trap of just saying, hey, folks, everything is fine. He called affordability a hoax, which really backfired. So he's not – I think he's lost touch with the common man, it seems. He hasn't been out on the road a lot. You don't see him doing a lot of rallies. You don't see him just go to a school or an event like somewhere in the heartland. So I think he's falling into that trap of saying, no, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. And people are like, our healthcare is skyrocketing. You know, we can't afford a home. And those issues will define the 2026 elections.
So before we go back to D.C., Jen, I want to come back to Phoenix for a little bit. And I apologize to take you back to the state capitol where you served for a little while. I was looking back at some of the stuff that we talked about over the course of the year from the legislature, and there's some stuff I totally forgotten about. I suspect that some people had as well.
I try.
you try. So there was obviously issues with Prop 123, the funding for education, which did not end up happening this year, a renewal of that. There was the bill dealing with funding for repairs to Chase Field. Mm-hmm. There was the so-called Axon bill, which is still causing waves in Scottsdale. There was a lot of budget drama going on with the chambers sort of each passing their own bill and sort of playing chicken with each other to see which one would get passed. A lot of vetoes. When you look back at the months and months that state lawmakers were in session, was there a common theme to you or like a common thread that stood out from 2025?
Chaos. I think, usually, at least the public-facing side is more united within the parties and within the chambers. Mm-hmm. And all of the inner party fighting and then, across the aisle, it happens. But we're currently seeing more fighting within each chamber, within each caucus in a way that, I'm just glad I'm gone at this point in time. I don't think we're making good public policy. I think we're performing in some cases.
Speaking of that, I think there's a grand bargain to be had on Prop 123. Mm. The Common Sense Institute did a great report about if potential state trust land reform.
Yeah.
There's still 9 million acres we are not using, and it could be a trifecta to help out not only education and our kids, but affordable housing and maybe location for data centers. It'll be interesting to see if Governor Hobbs or someone – it's a big lift. And there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
But there is a big grand bargain to be held that could really, affect the state positively for decades and decades. So I'm anxious to see if someone will take that on. I thought it was a great report by the Common Sense Institute about just laying out the case for how many billions of dollars are out there if we just – develop, use that land that was bequeathed to us at statehood in 1912.
Well, so Chip, Jen mentioned sort of intra and inter-party squabbles. And, we saw even at the end of the session, right after the legislature adjourned, Senate Republicans change out their leadership. I mean, what does that portend for 2026, do you think?
Well, just to that point, we could see a change in the Senate presidency.
Yeah.
So if Warren Peterson is running for attorney general 2026 next year, if there's rumors that he may leave and Senator John Kavanaugh or Senator T.J. Shope will want that position, that could shake up a lot of things because, Warren Peterson has been against short-term rental reform. Hasn't been too helpful on affordable housing. And, Senator Kavanaugh, even though he's very conservative, he's more pro short-term rental reform. So that could tip the balance. So there's a lot that will happen in the next month or so that could determine how the legislative session looks.
Yeah, it's going to be about a month or so till lawmakers come in. And, Jen, we've seen some bills pre-filed already. Is it too early to tell sort of what the tone and tenor might be? Of course, 2026, an election year, all 90 lawmakers, at least those who are running, are up.
Right. So I'd like the issues that you've already mentioned, right? Prop 123, we need a good budget. I think we have major water issues yet that haven't been dealt with that we're going to have to be talking about. And there's going to need to be some strong leadership within the legislature, a willingness to work with the governor. That has been one of the issues we've seen is I think majority has teed up legislation in a way to try and box in the governor and make her look bad. I don't think they've been as successful as they'd like to be. So I'd like to see folks working together to get these things done. What do you think? Do you think we can – do you think there are any adults in the room?
No.
I'm not making any friends. I won't be able to go down there this
year. There's a few. But there'll be issues that – you know, I saw one guy just filed a bill to eliminate daytime speed limits. So, you know, those
– On some like rural highways, not like on I-10 outside the windows here.
So my point is there will be two or three issues we're not – it's not even on our radar right now that will dominate
every huge chunks
of time.
Right.
But, you know, I wish, you know, that there'd be more consensus at the Capitol, but an election year, you know, with the governor up, the secretary of state, attorney general, these congressional swing districts, I don't think there's going to be a lot of collaboration at the Capitol. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see what, you know, Governor Hobbs can, in her State of the State address, really use a bully pulpit to cast a vision for the state, and we'll see if she takes that opportunity.
Quickly before we go to break, was there anything from 2025 from the session that you think will be particularly impactful for Arizonans going forward?
We're both looking at each other.
Oh, I was going to say the ag to urban bill.
I think that would be
beneficial. I think the Axon bill, if it plays out, could be a huge benefit to Scottsdale, the region. The Diamondbacks bill was a big deal, whether you like it or not. That's
to renovate Chase Field.
Chase Field to keep the team here and all the economic development in downtown.
I think that worked out. Yeah. I do. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But, you know, the union jobs that are coming out of that, the compromise that didn't take all of the city revenue away, I think that's going to end up a win-win. I'm not a huge fan of sports. And, you know, if rich people need somewhere to park their sports team, they should pay for it. But until I became a legislator and started recognizing all of these other issues. Yeah.
Jen, we did have some elections in 2025. I want to talk about one in particular, that, of course, the CD7 in Southern Arizona, the special election, which Adelita Grijalva, now Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, won to replace her late father, Raul. This kind of turned into a bit of a thing, right, when it took about a month or so for her to get sworn in. It became this huge controversy. She kept saying that it was because she was going to be the final signature needed on a discharge petition to force a vote on releasing the Epstein files. She eventually did get seated after quite a while. It happened, of course, also during the government shutdown. I'm curious, like looking back on it now with a little bit of hindsight, like I'm curious what you make of how that whole scenario played out.
Well, the amount of time it took to swear in was absolutely ridiculous. And I do believe that it was related to the discharge petition and the shutdown. There was another lawmaker, Tennessee, right? How many days was he sworn in after he won his special?
He won more. I think he was sworn in within a week or so winning that election.
Yeah, days, not like weeks and weeks and weeks. So, you know, I wonder what that difference was. But, you know, I'm glad Congresswoman Grijalva is there. The folks of Southern Arizona deserve robust representation. She is offering that already. And I'll also point out that the Epstein files are supposed to be released this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm grateful for the loud voices from Arizona, especially our senators. You know, Senator Gallego really got loud on that issue. And I'm, you know, as someone who has survived childhood sexual violence, I'm grateful he was there to do that. So let's get this done.
Yeah. Well, I think Speaker Mike Johnson, if he could do it all over again, he probably should have seated Congresswoman Grijalva immediately, because there was immediate blowback. Her name ID was off the charts. I mean, my friends in other parts of the country, like, we know who this congresswoman from Tucson is, you know. So I think they were going to get the discharge petition anyway. So I think it blew up in their face. I don't know why he did that. I'm sure he wanted to delay the release of the Epstein files. But for her, she's there now for CD7 representing her constituents. And I think she has a bigger voice now because of this than if, you know, when someone's typically elected, like, okay, Joe Smith, blah, 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 you move on. But now her name is kind of resonating throughout the Capitol's corridors in D.C.
Right.
So.
More to Chip's point, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, here in Arizona, you certainly keep track of those members. But on the national stage, a steady seat that, you know, isn't in contention, someone takes it and holds it for 15, 20 years mm-hmm. until they're ready to give it up. Those people tend to disappear in the background. I don't recognize those people in other states. And now everyone knows the name and will say it loud and proud, Adelita Grijalva.
All right. So one of the interesting things, we obviously, of course, have many, many elections coming up in 2026. One of the more interesting things, at least to me from this past year, was the fact that the Freedom Caucus, the Arizona Freedom Caucus, mm-hmm. is basically putting up its own slate of candidates. In mm-hmm. some cases, like, for example, in the Secretary of State's race, there's only one candidate, Representative Alexander Colladan. But, you know, in the Superintendent of Public Instruction race, the Freedom Caucus is challenging Tom Horn with Treasurer Kimberly Yee. They have obviously taken sides in the governor's primary. Chip, I'm curious how you see that playing out. I mean, America Fest Turning Point event is in town right now. Like, how do you see that? Like, is this a division within the GOP? Is this just sort of the usual kind of, there are different factions of every party?
Yeah, it's definitely a division in the Republican Party. And I think, I know they want their people to get elected, you know, the Freedom Caucus Turning Point. But I think Jen and her folks on the other side of the aisle are cheering this because they mm-hmm. love the division. You know, like in Congressional District 1 to replace David Schweiker, you're going to have Gina Swoboda, who has the Trump endorsement, but she's seen more of a mainstream candidate compared to Joseph Chaplick, who just announced, who's a Freedom Caucus member, very conservative, mm-hmm. Very into election conspiracies back in 2020. And if you're a Democrat, you have to hope that the more conservative, the MAGA type, the Freedom Caucus makes it to the general election. Because the rule of thumb is if you're a centrist Democrat, you have a better chance, like, you know, Governor Katie mm-hmm. Hobbs against Carrie Lake, or, you know, Ruben Gallego against Carrie Lake. So we'll see how that plays out, because I think, as we've seen in Virginia and New Jersey and these governor's races and other races across the country, it should be a good year for Democrats. They can mess it up. They're good at that. But it should be a better year for Democrats. So we'll see how all this plays out.
Is it dangerous, though, Jen, to sort of, as a Democrat, to hope for the Freedom Caucus, the Turning Point candidate, to win the primary? Because there's nothing that says they can't win the general, too.
Right. I think about that a lot when I celebrated this president's winning his primary. It's like, oh, we've got this. And then you end up with, you know, this particular perspective in the governing role. So I certainly have some concerns about that. I have a lot of concerns about that. You know, Joe Chaplick is a very effective campaigner. He'll be good on the stump. He very well could, you know, win the nomination and then go head to head against whoever comes out of my party primary.
And that's in the first congressional district, which mm-hmm. is currently represented by David Schweikert. He, of course, this year announced he's running for governor. And CD1 is one of, at least on paper, one of the more, if not the most competitive district in Arizona, and one that Chip, national Democrats, basically, if they're going to retake the House, they see this as one they kind of have to win.
Yeah, I think this one, and then I think it's CD6 with Representative
Siskamani. Yeah, in Southern Arizona.
That's even tighter. So those two races, I think, are two of the top 10 most competitive races in the country. And I think it's going to come down to E.J. Gion, their columnist in the New York Times, had a great column about 6 days ago. He called it the reasonable majority. So where are the voters that supported Trump in 2024, maybe low propensity, low efficacy voters, or just people who believe he could help out reduce the cost of living? Where will those voters go? They're not really MAGA types. They're kind of swayable. Hmm. And I think those types of voters will make the difference in all of these races, whether it's governor, whether it's CD1, CD6, those people who are not really sold on either party or either candidate.
Well, so, Jen, from a Democratic perspective, many of those voters presumably voted for the president, right? Mm-hmm. That he won a lot of low propensity voters. He was able to move a lot of formerly Democratic voters. So how do you think Democrats should be talking to those voters to try to win them back?
Well, certainly we need to focus on the breakfast table issues, right? Affordability. It is a real thing. Affordability is real. And I think that even in the previous race, we saw a lot of Trump voters who then voted for other folks, you know, split their tickets.
Yeah, a lot of Trump Gallego voters,
yes,
for example.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And I hope we'll continue to see that. I think that there has been a weakening of that MAGA base. They are growing disillusioned with some of the outcomes that they were promised have come to fruition and not the way that they expected them to. I think that'll play.
Yeah. We've said on the show before, too, that now all politics is national. It's not mm-hmm. local. So mm-hmm. things that happen in D.C., this healthcare issue, that will reverberate in Arizona and across the country. Things on AI can, you know, the federal government stop the states from regulating artificial intelligence. All these things will have huge impacts and repercussions for Arizona politics next year.
And back to that point, especially in Congress, but I think in state led races, this will play too. You know, we did not continue the Affordable Care Act subsidies. Everyone is going to see their insurance premiums double, triple. Mine did. And that's going to come home. When those folks who, in order to save money, went from their silver plan to a bronze plan or a catastrophic plan, and suddenly they are facing huge debt as a result of their coverage and they're paying a lot more than they should for it, they're going to start showing up at town halls. Do you remember that in the way back?
Yeah.
And, you know, folks are going to have to stand by the votes they took on these party principles that are now playing out in people's real lives.
All right. Very quickly, about 20 seconds left. I want to ask each of you, which race are you most interested in watching in 2026? Chip, I'll start with you.
The governor's race.
Governor's race.
Yeah.
Okay.
Governor.
Jen. Governor's. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Jen Longden, Chip Scutari, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Happy
Same
holidays
to you.
To you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.